Hello and welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. I'm Kathy Love. I started life as an OT, had an amazing, crazy private practice which I sold. And what I do now is help allied health business owners create a business that serves them, the time, the money, the joy that they absolutely deserve. And this is where my idea for the podcast started. What I want to do is to capture how hard allied health business owners in Australia work to achieve their dreams, to support their teams, to create amazing outcomes for their clients. So sit back, beverage of choice, drive safely, walk carefully, however you're listening in, and I hope you absolutely enjoy.
Welcome, everybody. I've got the directors of MediRecruit sitting in front of me today, Danielle Whedon and Claire Jones. Welcome. It's been a while.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks for having us on.
Yes, thank you for having us on. It has been a while.
And so we are in this kind of post-COVID world, hey? So the situation across Australia, well, across the globe is a little different from when we last kind of spoke. I'd love to hear from you what you've been up to in this last 12 months.
Yeah, so for your listeners out there who don't know who we are, we're a specialist allied health recruitment agency run by myself and Danielle. I'm an OT by background and Danielle's a physio by background. And we've been working in recruitment since 2001, so quite some time now. Mm-hmm. We recruit across Australia, New Zealand and the UK. And it's fair to say that we've never seen a tougher time in recruitment as we're seeing now. Post-COVID, post-introduction of the NDIS, our ageing population, there are so many factors impacting recruitment into allied health at the moment.
And Aussie therapists are starting to head back to the UK to do their 2 or 3 year working holidays now as well. So that's also not helping the market here at the moment.
And aligning that, Danielle, is from some of the members that we work with, clinicians are wanting or are requesting 6 and 8 weeks of leave to do Europe or wherever and then coming back or maybe even not coming back. So there's sort of requests for extended leave.
Yeah, that's interesting you should say that, Kathy, because I've been speaking to a few therapists recently who are heading to the UK for a holiday with a view to staying if they like it. So they're actually getting their registration, UK registration with HCPC ready to press send, heading over to suss it out and making that decision while they're over there whether or not they'll stay.
You think they'll stay?
I know what I'd do.
I know what I'd do too.
Give me my time again.
Kind of answers that. So maybe tell us, maybe share a little bit about the companies that you work with and a little bit about the recruitment process as well. Then we'll get into some of the trends that we're kind of seeing.
Over to me. Kathy, but we specialise in recruitment across Australia, New Zealand and the UK. But in terms of the Australian market, a lot of our roles sit in the clinical sector in the NDIS for private and for also community health services. There's a heap of work for OTs and speech therapists especially, but also physiotherapists and EPs. We work with a lot of private practices, niche private practices across paediatrics, but also adults and which is in physio might be neurology or TMJ, facial pain, etc. And we also do a heap of recruitment into the non-clinical, if you want to call it that, sector for clinicians that don't want to practice hands-on physio, OT, psych, EP, osteo anymore and that want to move into more non-clinical roles in the more corporate environment like OC rehab or injury management and device sales. So that's broadly the areas we recruit to. We partner with so many clients well because they need our help and we really do because they've been in the market for so long. We really have got a good grasp on market salaries and trends around what therapists are looking for in their next role and all of that sort of information.
And I'll also add there that Danielle's a physio background and I'm an OT by background, but our staff also have backgrounds in health or backgrounds in education. So it just gives us that understanding, that deeper understanding of what our clients need and what the role entails.
I'm curious, you may not be able to answer this, but what's your most popular request?
From clients or from?
Yeah, clients? From clients.
The unicorn.
The unicorn.
How long is it going to take me to find a senior OT or senior speech pathologist?
Yeah.
That's often the question which we can't answer straight away. We'll help. We'll do as much as we can. But, yeah, it is a tough market. They are out there, though. Yeah.
I think that is about the maturing that we're seeing in private practice, and so many practices are looking for those team leaders and looking for that leadership level, either to strengthen and expand what they've got or to bring it in kind of for the first time. And so those more senior clinicians with leadership potential mm-hmm. are potentially the unicorns. Where do you think they are?
I mean, just looking at OT and speech, there are significant rates of attrition from the profession, and I think we can confidently say that they're female dominant professions, and a lot of people do take breaks for family reasons. And I think it's twofold. So we have that, but then the introduction of the NDIS created so many more roles for allied health in general. And the question is, were we prepared for that influx of opportunities into the allied health market? Were we training enough therapists sort of, you know, 5 to 10 years before the introduction of the NDIS that would allow, you know, enough senior staff to across the board, across aged care, across the NDIS, across OC rehab, across hospital roles, across, you know, and I think the answer to that is no. So there's not enough, but I do think that we also have a little bit of a, you know, an issue with an untapped market. So the people that have left the profession, what is, you know, we need to look at their capacity to return to the workforce, and what is that? So are people not returning to the workforce because they can't come back in a full-time capacity? Could they come back in a 2-day role or a 3-day role, working flexible hours? And I think once we analyse that and look at then what type of work is going to suit them best. So is it a billing role, or is it purely a team management role or a professional development role? I think that we can pull people back into the workforce.
And I would also say that we're seeing some senior clinicians moving out of the hospital-based public health sector into the private community sector for the autonomy and for the flexible nature of working, being able to work from home if you need, and that sort of thing, plus a lot of the private NDIS providers are able to pay really well at the moment in terms of incentives and salaries. So we are seeing a shift of senior therapists out of the hospital-based environment.
Yeah. With those more senior clinicians in mind, what else do you think business owners need to be thinking about to attract those unicorns? Because everybody's offering flexible workplace, doing air quotes, everybody's offering this, that and the other, but what is really going to get a business head and shoulders above the others to maybe attract those seniors back?
I think it's about asking people what they want and assessing it on an individual need, because offering one thing for one person, like you can offer working from home and, you know, flexible working arrangements, but maybe somebody who's returning to the workforce isn't feeling so confident about returning to the workforce and, you know, and wants your mentorship for 6 months to transition into a role. And that's the sort of thing that you can only assess by actually talking to someone. So it's attracting someone, to getting your roles out there to the point where, you know, people will come to you and have that conversation. And maybe it's about advertising that we're interested to talk to you about what you need in your next role.
Yeah. And also the practices that are they still struggle with recruitment, but they're doing it relatively well, are the practices that are promoting their skill sets and what they've got to offer future clinicians, and networking, which traditionally I don't think health, you know, people that go into health go into it to help people, not to self-promote. So I think promoting, if you're a clinic owner, promoting your experience and skill set and what you can offer staff at whatever level is really important.
Sometimes I hear from business owners that they're not comfortable about promoting themselves, and that you kind of hear all of the things. And what I often kind of suggest is, well, maybe it's not promoting you, it's promoting what the business will provide, and perhaps getting back out of the way a little bit and putting the business forward as being able to create bespoke packages around, in this case, the senior clinicians. Does that make sense? Is that kind of, helps, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It is interesting, isn't it? As a huge generalisation, I find that OTs and speeches in particular are not great at self-promotion. The other thing I find is that practices and organisations are desperate for staff because they've got huge waiting lists, and they want to help those people, those children, their families, as much as they possibly can. So if you look at self-promotion, it's not really about your ego. It's about actually attracting people to your business that's then going to in turn actually benefit a whole lot of people out in our community that desperately need our services. So maybe if you think of it like that, maybe it makes a little bit more, it makes it easier to get out there and promote yourself and you know, advertise your skill set to make your business attractive.
And also senior and junior, but if you think about junior therapists, early career therapists as well, like they're a different generation to where we're at in terms of where you need to promote your business on social media platforms and the rest of it. So I do think in terms of broader marketing, it's important to do that, even though health is not normally comfortable with that.
Yeah. Hopefully it's something that's coming to an end soon with a new generation, Kathy. Hopefully we're breeding very, very confident, very, very confident therapists.
Yeah. What have you noticed about the 2023 graduate cohort? Are they finding jobs? Are they happy? Are they changing? What are they up to?
Yeah, I would say it's probably too early to tell. They've definitely found jobs. We had another year.
6 months before they graduate, they've likely found jobs.
Yeah. Recruitment is just starting earlier and earlier to the point where we're now seeing, you know, therapists in third years being scoped out for work, you know, after they finish their fourth year. So whether or not they're happy, are we seeing a lot of movement? No, not really at this stage. So just a little bit too early to tell, I think.
Yeah. I would say that I would say in last year's grad cohort and this year's, which are not graduated yet unless they're master's grads, they are very much looking at grad roles that can offer supervision and support in their grad years. I would say that, and that's a lot of what we do talking to graduates is say, don't follow the money in your grad year, follow the support and supervision so that you get a good grounding in your, you know, in your early first year or two of working, because there is a lot of money being thrown at graduates, but they're also not often, but occasionally not supported well enough to work confidently and competently in a grad role.
Yeah. What extent do graduates use recruitment services like yours?
They come to us for really two reasons. One, of course, is to scope out a number of different opportunities from somebody who's independent. I think in some ways they're a little bit hesitant to contact employers directly because it gets overwhelming and it gets very overwhelming quickly. But the other thing they come to us for is career advice to look at. We're having more and more conversations about the career pathway and not so much the first job or the next job, but what are my options? And including, you know, if I was wanting to go over to the UK to work, when would I do that in my career? And is it going to impact my chances of getting a job when I come home? Am I going to de-skill working in the UK? So I feel as though therapists are actually thinking more along, like, about career pathways now and not just the next job.
Yeah, I would agree. And also we offer, the first season of Allied Health Podcast is focused on grads as well in terms of advice around CVs and cover letters and interviewing and advice around interviewing. But we grads often come to us. We do we work with a lot of universities presenting to their fourth years, and they come to us for free resources like CVs, cover letters, all of that sort of thing as well.
Must be daunting for graduates to get out there into the market and to know how to show up and how to write up and how to prepare. And I have no clue what the universities help them with, but it possibly isn't enough for the volume of choice that they have.
Yeah. What we're seeing, Kathy, is that they're really struggling with is the end stage of the recruitment process. Because they're getting a number of job offers, and they're getting a number of job offers. They're going through multiple recruitment processes, and they're getting a number of job offers, and then they're in this position where they're going to have to say no to, in most cases, more than one, you know, company or organization, and that's the part that they have difficulty with.
Yeah,
and that's a really important thing to get right, because the world of allied health is small. The world of OT is even smaller in speech. And you never know when someone's going to show up later on in your career. So we offer a lot of advice around and a lot of assistance to manage that process and to say, you know, just because you're declining a job offer, you're not being offensive, but, you know, this is how you do it to keep doors open, bridges unburnt. And that role may be right for you in 3 or 4 years' time. So keep in touch, keep connected, and, you know, declining a job managed well can really open up doors in the future. So,
yeah, and also not that we are seeing grads being offered roles that then they have only got 24 hours to, you know, to accept or not. And I mean, I don't think any good employer would be forcing that on anyone. They want the person to accept their role because they want a therapist that wants to work for them. But we are hearing from grads that they're feeling under pressure on that front as well. So they're conversations that we can easily have as an independent party to it, and how to manage those situations as well.
Gosh, that's tough. Gosh, I wanted one job and I got the one I wanted. I didn't have a big plan.
I was exactly the same. And I didn't really think too much about it either. It sounded like a good job, so I took it.
No, and I might have had a really big night the night before my interview, just so.
But, Kathy, we, like Claire and I often talk about this, like six years ago, we were talking to grad OTs that were a year out of, you know, graduation that were still working in retail roles because they couldn't secure a grad OT role. And that's not that long ago in terms of, you know, a uni degree is 4 years here. So the market really has shifted so much for these grad therapists. I think it's a good thing though. I mean, amazing to have options. It's just about how you manage the process when you've got multiple options.
Yeah. Pretty steep process to manage as you're emerging from a student to a professional.
Definitely.
Yeah. Mm. The early career or the graduate early career, well, let's just go graduate. So the graduate clinicians heading over to the UK for their first job.
Are they heading over for their first job, Kathy?
Yeah, given that they haven't been able to travel too much in the
So we've got a lot of therapists that are really eager to go. So our advice is get at least 12 months of experience in Australia before you go.
Really? Okay.
Absolutely.
Why is that?
It's really good to like hone your foundation skills and your generic skills, your organisation, your communication, all that sort of thing, and just learn, you know, how to practice as an OT or a physio and a speech in the workplace. It'll just make for a much more confident transition into locum work. The important thing to remember is that in, you know, working in locum work in the UK, you can get really dropped in the deep end. You know, you're there to fill a gap. I remember when I worked as an OT in the UK, one of the locum roles I was in, you know, they had a staff meeting on the first day and I wasn't invited. It's really put out. Well, of course I wasn't invited. They weren't going to pay me £25 to sit in their staff meeting. I had ADLs to do. So that's why we say stay for at least 12 months. It also takes 6 months to get registered. So, and you can't start the registration process really until you've graduated and you've got your, you know, degree certificate and whatnot. So stay for 12 months, get registered, and then head over there with some confidence about what you're doing.
Hey there. Okay, it's time for a breather. Did you know about our Allied Health Biz Quiz? This is not just any quiz. It's a roadmap to growth, tailored specifically for Allied Health business owners like you. Hundreds of business owners have taken our free quiz and received their own customized report. And if you have already, then kudos to you. We hope you found it useful. But if you haven't yet, our free quiz takes less than 6 minutes to complete. It asks a series of questions based on our tried and trusted business accelerators. Think of the Allied Health Biz Quiz as a tool to measure where you're at, what's working, and how to build on what you already have. This quiz isn't about pointing out what's wrong with your business. It's about setting standards, measuring progress, and uncovering areas for improvement. Complete the Allied Health Biz Quiz today. You'll receive your own detailed customized report loaded with practical suggestions to help you get the best business brilliance outcomes. You can find the link in the show notes or on our website at naker.com.au. And now it's back to the conversation.
Running a business isn't just about setting up shop and becoming complacent. It's about showing up for ourselves and our clients with a commitment to continuous improvement. We have to be honest with ourselves about where we're at and where we're going. That means identifying strengths and weaknesses so we can improve. After all, if we're remaining stagnant, how can we scale and build the business and life of our dreams? That's where the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz comes in. We're not talking horoscopes and horoscopia. This questionnaire is the perfect starting point for you to begin identifying your strengths, needs, and blind spots as an allied health business owner. The process is simple. Answer the 14 questions and we'll send you a personalized report that includes actionable steps for you to start taking your business to the next level. Ready to take your business into your own hands? Take the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz today.
Dropping in the deep end is bringing a bit of a flashback. I had a wonderful job here in Melbourne with a client list of 25. And my first job in community health in the UK, I had just over 200 clients. Like, what do you do with the other kind of 190? Like,
absolutely. And who do you see first?
Just cards on the wall. I can pretty much just pick a card and start there.
Yeah, and you're working in a different health system. Yep. You know, there's so many little things that make it a little more stressful than working in Australia. You know, for a start, you pick up and you go over there, and you'll be in the opposite season. So if you leave in summer over here, and you arrive in the depths of winter, and that's a shock. I know that sounds ridiculous, but that's a shock to the system in itself. And it's real winter. It's, you know, the sun doesn't really come up over there in, you know, December, January, February. So there's so many things to contend with.
Yeah. And then what about, and so we're aware that there's increasing numbers of clinicians heading over to the UK in this instance or anywhere else. What about the reverse? What about the clinicians coming to Australia now that they can?
Yeah. So we've got two things happening now. We're starting to see our first wave of clinicians that went over to the UK as soon as borders opened. We're starting to see them expressing interest in coming back for early next year. And they are terrific therapists to grab. Our ones that have gone over and locumed in the UK, you know, I often get the question, you know, will I develop my clinical skills over there? Well, I say yes. But you also just personally, you really grow doing something like traveling abroad and, you know, working and holidaying and traveling and whatnot. So they're great therapists to grab. I also find they've got a therapist coming back from the UK as a generalization again, but they've largely got a really good idea of what they want to do when they come back and what area they want to specialize in if they're going to specialize. Now, the other part to that is we've got English therapists, South African therapists,
Irish,
yeah, wanting to come to Australia to work. And, you know, again, this is, it's a great market to explore. If they need sponsorship, it can be it's definitely more costly. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's just higher risk recruitment. So bringing someone out to start in a permanent role on sponsorship, you've got a lot riding on the fact that, you know, are they going to settle into Australia? Are they going to enjoy the job? You've interviewed them via video link, but are they going to be a good fit for the team? So it's just a higher level. There's just more risk involved. There's always the option to pick up therapists that are here on a working holiday that are looking to stay and need sponsorship. If you're going to look at making that investment, that at least gives you a chance to sort of try before you buy. And, you know, you can get a really good feel for, are they a good fit for the team? You know, what are their clinical skills like? How do they perform in the role before you make that decision to invest in sponsorship?
Yeah, and anecdotally, we've heard from some clients that have recruited South African therapists and have been really happy with the level of performance, the clinical skill set and the hardworking nature of it. So their skill sets are there and ready to go. It's just about attracting them. Hopefully they're already in Australia and you can meet with them. But, yeah, we're hearing that as well.
Yeah. How time-consuming and complicated is the process of sponsorship?
Yeah. So we have our own podcast series, Allied Health Podcast. Season 2, episode 1, we interview Justin Wilson, who is a migration agent from Callum Wilson and Co. And Justin outlines the process of sponsoring a therapist to work in Australia and the cost to do so. So it is quite involved. There are a number of steps, but he does a really good job at outlining everything that's involved in that episode of Allied Health Podcast.
We will definitely reference that. I haven't listened to that one, so I'll take a bit of a listen up. Sometimes I'm sort of struck by how Allied Health business owners potentially underestimate the time and the cost and the risk. And they may sort of feel that they've tried all avenues here and really this is the only solution. I get a little alarmed on that. Because there's always going to be more than one solution. So it's a lot of eggs to put in one basket, high risk basket.
Yeah, it is. I think one thing I will say though, when you find the right person, I think the process seems less daunting. Mm. So if you were to go down that path of considering sponsoring an overseas trained therapist, I would say run an interview process first. And then if you feel as though you can put advertisements out or come to us and you look at a number of CVs and conduct a number of interviews and just make the investment of that process, like allocate 10 hours to that, interview a few therapists, and at the end of that, you might have a clear idea as to whether or not you want to go down that path or not. If you find the right person, it could be really obvious, you know, what you should do.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say as well, Kathy, for anyone that is looking for staff and haven't used an agency before, we are obviously a recruitment agency, but there's no cost to have a discussion with us or a practice owner or a business owner looking for staff. We obviously have a permanent recruitment fee that is charged if we find a candidate and only on the day that they start. So even to talk to us initially and pick up the phone and have a chat, even to agree terms, there's actually no financial cost for us to do some searching. We've got amazing networks because we've been in business for 21 years. So if anyone hasn't used an agency before, there's no financial risk unless we find you someone amazing. So that's another thing to factor in if any of the, you know, any of your networks haven't used agencies before.
You raise a great point that there's a lot of fear and I can't afford an agency and they're all so expensive. Do you guys want to banish that fear? Because you know what I think about that.
Yeah. I'm happy to banish it. Most of our
banish away.
Most of our amazing clients that we partner with, because really the clients that we work well with, we are partnered. They look at the financial cost and they know what it's going to mean if somebody stays for longer than, you know, 8 weeks or whatever the commercial side of it is. But there is no financial risk to use us. There's no risk, and we have a refund guarantee for anybody that starts through us as well. But I think the reason that we've been in business for so long is because we're really honest. If somebody says to us, can you find me a speech pathologist in regional New South Wales, we will say, no, we can't guarantee that we will find you one. We do speak to some clients who have used agencies before and have, you know, sort of had to pay a retainer. We don't charge a retainer or any of those sorts of things in terms of recruitment. So really there is a cost, and that's only on the day that a therapist starts in a role. So it's pretty straightforward.
And the other thing too I mentioned is we never encourage you to stop the recruitment process yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
So the market's too dire to do that. So any agency that's asking you to, you know, hand over the controls solely to them, not a great idea.
Something else that business owners may not consider is how much they will learn about themselves as business owners and how much they'll learn about their business and their team and essentially their value proposition by working with recruiters as well. And they might have to be, you know, just a little open-minded, growth mindset about what they might need to stop thinking and doing and what they might need to start thinking and doing to make themselves attractive.
Absolutely. And they're the questions that we're going to ask that's going to force you to think about those things. So what are the benefits of joining your practice?
Do you have a position description? Because most candidates they want to be part of your team and your business and your brand, if you'd like to call it that. There's got to be all of this stuff in place to attract good staff.
Yeah. And how much experience do you have?
What
can you offer? What can you offer a therapist in terms of, you know, professional growth and development? And people underestimate that, Kathy.
They do. Between us, we look at a lot of websites and we look at a lot of join the team pages and look at a lot of, well, we do with our members, you know, the employee value proposition piece. And a lot of it is all very, very same. And it is really a joy to read a website that really talks about the value proposition from a wholehearted, committed point of view. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to work in the market to say you'll get supervision. You need a lot more detail and top coding on that.
What does that look like? What is that? What does that mean each week? Also, I think a lot of our clients, on the back of that, the value proposition, and also the fact that our knowledge at MediRecruit, we have so much market knowledge around salaries, what other businesses are paying. It's all confidential. We don't talk about business specifically, but if someone's even dabbling in the idea that they might look at using an agency, you can always call us and we can give you market advice. What a grad's earning, what a therapist 5 years out earning, what else could I do to attract them? And we can give advice on how other practices are structuring their remuneration or structuring their incentives or structuring their work-life balance commitments or whatever else it may be.
Yeah, so those keys to what's resonating with candidates.
And what they're looking for, what sort of competition you're up against in terms of wanting a therapist with 3 years' experience. Yeah.
We often have clients contact us who, you know, even talking about, you know, pay rates, and they will say to us, well, what do I need to pay a grad therapist at the moment? And it's amazing how much it's shifted in the last 2 years alone. Frightening. Maybe not so much amazing.
Yeah, that's complicated. That's complicated. What do you think the recruitment market is going to look like in the next, let's just go 3 years. Because it's been tight and highly competitive and candidates market. Is this going to persist or something else?
I'm confident it is going to persist because we're really only seeing the shift across the entire spectrum now. So the entire spectrum of roles across allied health. So the first sign of the shortages really appeared in private practice. But now it's flowing onto hospital roles. It's flowing into injury management and occupational rehabilitation. So I feel as though it's now affecting all areas of practice.
Yeah.
The shortages. So I can't see that resolving in the next 3 years.
No, I can't either. And then on top of that, we've got the fact that borders were closed for 2 years or however long, and that therapists are now wanting to go and work in their chosen career in the UK and earn good money and travel that maybe didn't get to do it 3 years ago when they planned. Yeah. The other positive, which I don't think is necessarily going to shift it a heap in the next 5 years, but I know OT Australia have done some research on it, but I think there are something like 2,500 OT grads each year now coming out of unis in Melbourne, across Australia, not Melbourne, yep. Which is a lot more than it was 5 years ago. So at least there's going to be some more grads out there. So that's a positive.
But we've got to get those grads excited about working in potentially an NDIS-funded environment, potentially interested in working in a government environment. And, you know, you sort of mentioned about going for the structured programs and the mentoring and the support rather than chasing the big dollars.
Yeah. There are some great, saying that though, there are also some great community private organisations that have got amazing grad programs going on as well and really supportive, really with tech in terms of, you know, even though the roles are fairly autonomous, really super supportive in virtual clinical support at their fingertips. So, yeah, that is also out there.
Yeah. Got a couple of minutes left. I'll give each of you the chance to kind of leave a bit of a message for consideration.
Claire, you're good at that. First. You're good at that, Claire. You go for it.
Claire, you're good at that. You go first. Just Claire cringing and...
No, I think the message is for smaller private practices who are finding recruitment difficult at the moment, just don't underestimate what you have in your self and what you have in your team, whether it be small. I know
almighty.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, there is, you know, the obvious, you know, we've just talked about structured graduate programs. Mm. But I know me personally as a graduate, I just loved shadowing. And that's how I learnt. But that's where I did my best learning. So yes, it's important to have, you know, a structured program, but that program might be you'll spend an hour with me each day in on a session, you know, for the first 6 weeks, and then we'll do it ongoing, you know, depending on what you need, or we'll do it 3 times a week. Or so just think outside the box in terms of, you know, what you have available and what you can offer, because that is something that's just so valuable to our graduate and early career therapists, is actually sitting in on sessions. And there's so much autonomous working at the moment that if you can offer the opportunity to, you know, have junior therapists work side by side with you, that it's very, very attractive.
Yeah.
My messaging.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of co-working.
Mm. Yeah. And I think my messaging would also be networking. Allied health professionals traditionally haven't been great at networking, which goes hand in hand with not self-promotion and marketing and that side of thing. But I think networking all the time, and also always recruiting, even if you don't feel like you've got a role at the moment. I feel like the networking and recruiting in advance can only buffer you if somebody does resign or whatever else it may be. But I feel like networking is part of that, because the minute you need somebody, you've got a network of therapists who all talk. And as I said before, and as you know, Kathy, it's a really small allied health world. So I think networking and always recruiting is my tip.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Building relationships, and yeah, you never know who's going to cross your path next or who you might need next or who may need you in different ways as well. And I think it's a habit that totally stalled over 2021 and probably half of 2022, understandable, but you know, getting the shoes on and a bit of lip gloss and whatever. And getting back out there. And I think also we've made it a little bit difficult for ourselves that there are quite limited opportunities for networking as well. You know, where so many business owners find themselves in clinical conferences and clinical workshops and the conversation is very clinical, creating those environments for business conversations. Still don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, one and all. Thank you, Danielle. Thank you, Claire.
Thanks, Kathy. It's really good to chat to you again.
Yeah. Always good to catch up, Kathy.
All righty. We'll see you guys soon.
See ya.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. For the show notes and other resources, our webinar replays, they're all available over on naker.com.au. And if you're loving what you're listening to, please subscribe. We don't want you to miss out on a single thing. And if you want others to get the same benefit that you've had from listening into these episodes, please share this episode and any of the others forward to any of your other allied health business colleagues. And we are totally here for you. Don't forget for a moment that you can jump on in and book that power call, and we can see how we can help you get the best of business done. Looking forward to seeing you there.